Welcome back to Your Political Playlist. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. With a new presidential administration and new Congress, there's a significant amount of work to do cleaning up the mess Trump left behind and enacting new policies. Some ideas are new, and some were the policies debated throughout the 2020 presidential race that we discussed in season one. No matter where these policies originated, we are going to continue to be your trusted source as the ideas move forward. Every week, I'll be offering up bite-sized policy conversations from women who are leading the charge, either as elected officials, advocates, or policymakers. As always, all of our guests will be women. Today, I'll be talking with two guests. First is Heather Boucher, who will help us understand how the White House's executive actions impact families. Heather is a member of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Biden administration and is one of the nation's most influential voices on economic policy. She is also the former president and CEO of the Washington Center for Equitable Growth. Our second guest is Fatima Goss Graves, CEO of the National Women's Law Center. Fatima will walk us through the care crisis American families are experiencing and the policies and investments needed to help those families. Welcome, Heather.
So here's the thing. Actually, the Council of Economic Advisors was established by law in 1946 as a part of the Full Employment Act. We have actual statutory responsibilities. The NEC was established first in the Clinton era in 1982 and is a White House office. So we're our own agency. So we're actually quite cool.
Oh, that is very cool. Well, congratulations. That is awesome.
Why, thank you.
And so what are you doing by statute?
We have to advise the president on economic issues and what's going on with the economy. And we have to produce an annual economic report of the president, responsible for making sure that he gets data releases, that those are, you know, comprehensive and understandable and things of that nature.
Which leads us right into, you've been busy. You've been busy since day one. So can you help us walk through these executive orders that President Biden has signed in the first just couple of days of his presidency, and particularly how it's going to help families?
Certainly. So there have been a lot of executive orders that the president has put out. But let me start with some of the ones that I think are most important, right? So he started with a series of executive orders around the coronavirus pandemic. So things like the, you know, the 100-day mask challenge that he called it, encouraging people to use masks, requiring it where he could, requiring masks in federal spaces and during travel, so that we could be more safe as we go about our business. But really important is that those workers could also be safe, right? So the flight attendants and the people working on the trains and buses, you know, the trains and stuff could be safe, and then re-engaging with the World Health Organization. So that is a core piece of the EOs, and I just wanted to start there and spend a little bit more time on those, because the economic crisis that we've had in 2020 has fundamentally been about our failure, our inability to contain this pandemic. And so the very first thing, the very number one priority for the president has been to do whatever he can to contain the pandemic. And so those orders and why they were first is in order to do that. And that is why we prioritize that in the American Rescue Plan, the legislation, the rescue package that he's put forward. There's a whole bunch of other orders that he's put out, from everything from continuing to extend the moratorium on student debt, so that those folks that have debt don't have to worry about that right now, the foreclosure and eviction moratorium, so that people don't have to worry about being put out on the street during this economic crisis. And then really importantly, and we talked about this, the president's talked about this a lot over the last few days, was the executive orders around racial equity, really sort of showing to the American people that addressing racial equity is absolutely important for people all across our society, but also for our economy. And, a series of orders that pull that forward. And then, of course, today he's been talking about a series of orders around addressing climate change and making sure that as we transform our economy to this new economy, where we're going to move beyond fossil fuels, that we make sure that the jobs that we're creating are good jobs and that we have this fair transition, that we really sort of think strategically about how we're going to make our economy competitive and that we're going to bring the American people and American workers along with us.
Can you
just a smattering?
Yeah, just a little, just a couple of small issues. Can you help us understand the difference between the legislative package and the executive orders?
Yes. So this is basically I've got that Schoolhouse Rock song going on in my head. You want me to explain the difference between the executive branch and the legislative? So, you know, the president has a lot of authority. He's the head of the executive branch of government. So he can do things that pertain to how he's executing on laws that have already been passed. And using his presidential authority. But that is very different than the power of the purse that Congress has. So in order to really fully address the coronavirus crisis, in order to really get our economy back on track, we need money. We need money going out to families and firms and states and communities to get the vaccine distributed, to make sure that everybody has the protective gear, to make sure that schools can reopen safely, and to make sure that while we're waiting for the virus to recede, that people are getting their unemployment benefits. And all of that has to be done through Congress. So this is what the separation of powers looks like. But both pieces are really important because it's important how government goes about the act of governing. And so the executive orders show the American people how Joe Biden is going to lead the country, what are his values, what is important, and how he's going to direct the thousands of federal government workers all across the country to do their jobs. So that's what we're talking about as he's putting these actions out.
There were a couple of pieces in the executive orders that really struck me as really putting families, really centering families and their needs right now, especially people with young kids, both getting the schools open again as much as they can be in a safe way, you know, making sure that there's assistance to families, particularly those who are having food instability and hunger issues. Can you talk about how those came to be part of the centers of the executive orders and how the economists on your team really think about these issues?
Emily, I'm really glad that you asked that question because, you know, over the course of the campaign and after the election and into governing, the president has been really focused on how is it that we can meet this moment? What is actually going on in the economy and what do we need to do to fix it? So when you start there and you start by saying, okay, well, what's happening right now is that there's lots of people that can't go to work. There's restaurants that are closed. There's travel that's not happening. There's places like Las Vegas where the economy is virtually shut down because people aren't going to those tourist destinations. And so what is it that people in those communities need, right? So the foundation of thinking about how you both address the economic challenges for those folks who are out of work. And then on the other hand, of course, because schools have closed all across the country, we know we've learned in 2020 how important the care economy is for keeping the whole economy running. If there's one lesson out of 2020 that I take, it is that, if people can't access care for their children, for their loved ones, and they can't get to work, the economy doesn't work. And so when you start there, you really see that, getting schools reopened is absolutely mission critical to getting workplaces up and functioning and allowing workers to do their jobs, allowing those parents to support their families. So our mandate from then candidate, now President Biden, was to really focus on what are the economic issues and then building up a program that would actually address those.
Are those the conversations that President Biden had with you? Can you share a little bit about what those conversations were like when formulating the economic plans?
His questions have, in my experience, have always been centered around what is happening to to America's middle class and to America's workers and to small business folks around the country. Those were the things that he kept asking when I would talk to him. Like, how is it that we can support workers, families, small businesses? How can we make America competitive? But really keeping his eye on the fact that the economy is about all of us that participate in it. It's about how well firms can thrive. It's about how, whether or not people can get to work. It's about whether or not people have what they need to be able to do those jobs and that those jobs pay well. So those were the things that he pressed, that he always kept front and center.
Looking at the announcement, like day after day, of the staff that's going into the White House, it's really exciting to see that it really is a much more diverse staff than we've ever seen before in every aspect. And I know that the president has said he wanted to be reflective of America. It really does look like that. It does feel like that. How do you think, or I guess, what perspectives have you had and conversations have you had when formulating these economic policies that hadn't really been present? I guess you can't really, you weren't in the last administration, but I guess you can guess were different than they might have had.
That is a tough question because I wasn't there. A tough question to answer. But let me just say a couple of things. Who's in the room matters, right? And the voices and the perspective that we bring to the table, it matters because people bring their life experiences. They reflect the concerns of their families, their communities, where they come from. And I see that reflected every day. Just we've only been here a week, but already I've had a number of conversations where the policies that we're talking about, the different perspectives that are around the table are being informed by the diversity of the people that President Biden has brought into this administration. And it's really exciting to see a group of people that looks more like America, and where the concerns of, you know, the American worker and the American family are being put front and center.
Well, to your point, I mean, do you think that we're going to see even more economic policies around caregiving? It just feels like it was a space that there were not enough policies, that there wasn't enough support for already, and the pandemic has just put a massive spotlight on. So do you think that we're going to see more, and what would that look like?
Well, what I can talk about is, on the campaign, now President Biden talked a lot about the care economy and the things that we needed to do to improve access and quality of childcare, and similarly access and quality to long-term care services, home health aides and the like. And one of the things that he talked about a lot, of course, was that this is about the services that families need, but the services are about the workers that are providing them. And so we need to be able to think about the care economy as a fundamental piece of our economy, and that we need to think about those workers and their wages. So many of those workers, disproportionately, they're women of color, and they're among the least paid workers in our economy, in our society. And of course, as an economist, I could tell you there is reams of economic research, some of which on the shelf, in my bookshelf here behind me, showing that the quality of care is directly related to the quality of the jobs of the person providing that care. So if you want high quality childcare care, you need to pay somebody a living wage. Otherwise, you see high turnover, you see lower productivity. And so these are the kinds of issues that the Build Back Better agenda put front and center, and that were just really important to connect the dots between what's happening to the American family and how it's what's happening in the American workplace is affecting the economic security for all families.
Do you think because that security is kind of the legs have been cut out, cut out from us basically, and everyone's feeling it, and it's not partisan in any way. Like it's impacting everybody. So do you think the politics around having support for these issues is changing on some of them?
So I certainly think it is changing. I think that 2020 is just a year that has shown us the importance of these issues and the resonance of them across our society. As you said, these are not issues that only some families face. These are issues that all families face at some point during their life. And different families, of course, face them in different ways, right? You've got some workers with the luxury of being able to telecommute, but they've been dealing with the stress and the anxiety of having to telecommute from home with little kids and how you do that. And then you've got other workers who've been those essential workers who've had to go out into the workplace and then have had to, have really tough conversations and decisions about what then happens to children during the workday while they're out doing those jobs. So but both of those are really questions of care, what kinds of services people have. But you can see this playing out across all different kinds of families. So I think that the resonance has really been put front and center. And let me just add one more thing. There is new research that's come out this year because of the extensions that we've done to paid sick days that shows that giving workers the right to stay home when they're sick actually has reduced the transmission of the coronavirus. And that is yet another indication that valuing workers, making sure that they have that time to care, is not only good for them, but it's good for all of us.
Heather, is there anything I haven't asked you that we should be sure to cover? That's fine. I can hear my kids like knocking on the door, basically.
So I think the one thing that I do want to stress that's really important is that, right now, one of the most important issues for families is getting schools reopened. And so that's why I've been so glad to see that Joe Biden has prioritized that and said this is, the number one policy agenda. But we're not going to be able to do that in the ways that we need to give the school districts the support they need unless we give them the money they need. And that's going to require that we pass this American Rescue Plan that has so many resources for schools to help them do that and do that safely. And we know that it can be done safely, but it just requires those resources. So I hope that we can spend more of our energy really focusing on helping to make that happen.
Great. Thank you so much, Heather Boucher. Great to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Emily.
Okay, so we can end it.
Now we're going to jump over to our conversation with Fatima Goss-Graves, CEO of the National Women's Law Center, on what she hopes to see for families in the new Biden-Harris administration.
So we'll get right down to it. We're just doing a little intro conversation talking about the fact that obviously incredibly important issues, family economic policy, family economic security, when we last spoke, which was at a live event we did with Rent the Runway, which was very cool to hear about the policy side and the business side. And now, I mean, more important than ever, there's no difference between our family life, economic policies that keep us working, that keep us alive. So I'm very excited to hear from you what you're hoping to see from the Biden-Harris administration. And I'd actually love to hear like short-term and long-term, like, Congress is negotiating a COVID relief package right now, which is going to be so incredibly critical to the lives of so many. And then, kind of getting to the long term too, but making sure we're hitting both.
Yeah, well, I should just say that the care crisis we were already facing before this pandemic hit was happening, but maybe too far below the surface. It is now front of mind. It's front of mind for families in this country who are working and homeschooling and caregiving and overstretched with a fiscal cliff coming, with people not being able to pay their rent, pay their mortgage, and workers still working in essential ways and not having protection. So they need to move fast. But even in whether they move fast and do their jobs, what's before us is huge. And for the Biden-Harris administration, their deep understanding of the care economy and the things that they can do to make it possible for people to actually work and care and live, even on the other side of this pandemic, that has to be top of mind for them.
Are there things that are in either or both of their past that they've worked on legislatively with President-elect Biden, Vice President-elect Harris, that indicate to you how they're going to prioritize, like which policies, I mean, you can't do everything. So which policies are they really going to prioritize and lean into?
Well, the first first thing is, I don't know if you saw their platform, but they did something really interesting that I don't think really has been done before, is that they had a common story around care, right? They understood that the needs for workers who are caregivers, who are paid professional caregivers, providing long-term care, providing childcare and other forms of care, that those were one set of needs, but they were not disconnected from the needs of families to actually be able to have care for their children and care for their loved ones who are in long-term needs. And those aren't disconnected from that period of time right after the birth of a child, right? That need for self and family care. So they told a common story around it. And so I guess when I hear like they're not going to do everything, well, one of the things that they're understanding is that these are connected and they're going to have to address them together. So that was a huge step forward. We also know that Vice President Harris is one of the, I kind of like saying it.
Still feels good.
It's just very cool. So Vice President Harris was one of the lead sponsors of the Domestic Worker Bill of Rights. And that was a bill that sort of set out a range of changes in how we think about the paid caregivers who provide who provide care in our homes, right? Who provide childcare and long-term care, who clean our homes, who make our families and economies function, but are left out of our legal landscape, almost entirely left out of our civil rights protections, left out and not treated the same in our wage and hour laws, not able to have things like paid sick days and paid leave. And what happened in this pandemic is you saw a crisis, both a crisis in people not having any care, but for these workers who were suddenly shut out of jobs without any protections, it was devastating. So it's really exciting to have coming in the White House really the lead on this issue. And for President Biden, I think what we will see and what we have seen him talking about is a need to invest in major ways in things like childcare and in things like long-term care and weaving it throughout. And already in the appointments that he's announced, he has put people who are experts precisely on this issue. Right? We have seen in his economic advisors who've been announced that these are people who come with deep and longstanding expertise on paid leave, on childcare, and about how the economy functions. I think we're going to have a totally different conversation.
Yeah, tell us more about that. Which of the positions named that you've seen have really gotten you going? And which positions are you still looking to be filled that you think are going to be incredibly critical for these economic issues?
Here are some things that we do know. The Council of Economic Advisors has been announced, and it will be chaired by Cece Rouse. And it also will have Jared Bernstein and Heather Boucher. And I don't know how much the folks who are tuning in know about their records, but these are people who have been studying these precise questions for decades, whose groundbreaking research has laid the foundation for a lot of the work that folks like you and I do. So right there with that economic council, we are set up in some different ways. We also know that Neera Tanden is nominated for OMB, and she has led the Center for American Progress for a very long time. And in that time, CAP has been a leader in thinking through these care questions, in thinking through paid leave, in thinking through childcare. They have been partners arms in arms on so many of those issues with the National Women's Law Center. So to have someone like that at OMB, that is more than significant. To me, the appointments we have seen so far suggest that they understand that things like the care economy have to be front and center, but we have to watch and see the range of these announcements to come. We just found out this week that the nominee for HHS secretary is going to be California Attorney General Becerra, and he too has a long record on health and health equity and reproductive health, but he also has a specific record on the range of low-income programs that HHS has a role on too. And so I have to say that people should look up these folks and learn about them and the work that they have been doing, because it's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Health and Human Services, HHS oversees a ridiculous amount of programs. I mean, it's Medicare, it's Medicaid, it's public health core. Like, there's so much. I know especially the reproductive rights community was deeply invested in knowing who this is going to be. And right, he's great news. Everyone's really celebrating him. Of course, I would be remiss to not also celebrate the Surgeon General coming back, Vivek Murthy.
Yes.
Love. Sure. So excited about him.
And in a pandemic, his voice, even the last couple of months when he wasn't in this role, has been so important. So to have him return in this role and bring that level of experience and steadiness is exciting.
Oh, I know. I mean, the work he had been doing when he was not the Surgeon General was right. I mean, talk about timely, like, was writing a book about how loneliness can impact your physical health. I mean, who does not need that now? Like,
oh my
goodness. He's stepping in day one ready.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that we haven't even gotten to talk about is how this care crisis is actually affecting people's mental health right now. I mean, it is no accident that the idea that you would work and care and parent and teach all at the same time in the same hour blocks is going to take a toll. And it is taking that toll on women in particular in this country, physical toll, economic toll, but there is a mental health toll that is happening as well.
Absolutely. So are you looking for, I just want to just make sure we get this in our conversation, again, a quick hit conversations. I know a lot of organizations, people, areas are looking for like 100 days actions from the Biden-Harris administration. So whether it's executive orders, rule clarification, what are you looking for in the first 100 days from the administration?
So I actually think in the first 100 days, we have to provide additional and serious relief for families in this country. That pandemic and addressing the pandemic has to be top of mind. And the care crisis is squarely in the middle of it. So we are looking for a major investment for the Biden-Harris team to put their full weight behind it to get this done for families in this country who have been waiting, waiting, waiting. You know, I have a long list of executive actions that that basically should be undertaken to undo some of the worst of what the Trump administration has done.
And but what I, is oh, that? Sorry.
Well, just, unfortunately, it is across every aspect of your life. Whether it is that you are focused on how people are treated in terms of their wages at work, how tip workers are treated, whether it is that you are focused on how things like in education, the Title IX rule has played out. We just had a trial on that terrible rule last month at the National Women's Law Center. Whether it is you are focused on the range of rules around housing and benefits that made it harder for people to access those things during a pandemic, or for us, we are deeply and squarely focused on the range of things that they have done on reproductive health care that we have been litigating against this administration over the last 4 years. I am excited to be able to sweep some of those worst actions away and launch this country forward. That's what people are waiting for.
Thank you so much. This is Fatima Goss-Graves, President, CEO of National Women's Law Center. Here, I'm Emily Tisch Sussman. Thank you so much, Fatima. It's great to be with you.
Great to see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Political Playlist. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Your Political Playlist, where you can see video of Fatima's interview and join us live to ask questions during future ones. My conversation with Heather can also be found written up in Parents Magazine. For more on Heather Boucher, follow her on Twitter at HBoucher. For more from Fatima Goss-Graves, follow her on Twitter at FGossGraves. Join us every week for smart, bite-sized conversations with women at the seat of power and activism. Subscribe if you like us, leave us a rating and comments, let others know. Talk to you next time.